Welcome to the Church Planter Talks podcast, a resource made for church planters by church planters. Everything from practical helps to philosophical discussion, the Church Planter Talks podcast starts right now. I am your host, Corey E. Stepp, and joining me as always, Richard Rossiter and Preston Hoyseth. Can you guys believe we're already on episode number 9? This has been awesome to produce, and I love the conversations that we've had. I think they've been highly profitable and highly productive. And so if you're out there and you're listening to this podcast and you think the same, be sure and leave us an iTunes rating there. And if you haven't subscribed yet, you can go to iTunes and subscribe on there through the podcast app on your iPhone, or you can go to SoundCloud if you have an ungodly Android, so you don't have to miss a single episode. We've also started a Facebook page where we regularly share extra content and posts relating to church planting, and we would love to connect with you on there as well. And obviously Pastor Roster is looking for more Facebook friends, so please, that can be the avenue through which he can get that. Well, guys, before we even start, I know that Brother Preston has just come out of his men's advance. Brother Preston, you want to give us an update on how that went?
Yeah, we had our very first men's advance of the North, and it was pretty fun getting everybody together, and they had never been to anything like this before, and I think it was pretty good turnout. We had 9 churches from the region participate in that, and we had just over 30 guys, and pretty much the comments I was getting afterwards is, hey, we'll see you next year, you know, good. Already excited, that's looking awesome. Forward to it, and so I think it was a big help. We had Brother Richard King here, who is active in church planting and church rescuing. And then we had a couple other pastors from the region, and had a great time. And but yet, as good of a time as it was, I'm glad to have it behind us.
Yeah, and I can echo that from our men's advance. I don't think we've given an update on our men's advance either. I think you gave a pre-update. Or like before it even happened, you were saying, "Oh yeah, it went really good," because obviously this is airing way later.
That's anyway. How we do it in showbiz. You just assume it's going to go well, you know, break a leg. No, we had a great men's advance. We had just over 30 churches participate. We had just over 500 people, and Brother Kurt Skelly did just a phenomenal job preaching, and we had, you know, just a good time. And so prayerfully, it'll continue, and it'll be, you know, have a lasting effect in churches. And it's our 16th, and so we're so excited about what the Lord did there. And I look forward to next year going up and doing Brother Hoyseth's skits for him. And so yes, it'll be a good time there at his men's advance.
Did you
getting kicked out of Minnesota.
Did you say have a lasting infect on people?
Yes.
Yeah. That's more accurate than
a lasting infect. At least that's what the skits do, where hopefully the preaching has a impact. We did get some pushback this year, Brother Hoyseth, on the skits, that some people thought that, you know, you shouldn't joke.
Jesting was the term.
Jesting.
Yeah.
And
they very loudly, vocally said it.
If this was your 16th year, you were overdue for that pushback.
But of course, it has to happen on the first year I'm here.
Yeah. And the funny thing is, really, we took it as encouragement that they were being effective. This is not the first pushback, but I've always had a buffer. I could always send those complaints to Pastor Nail, and I never had to hear them. And so, no, it was a blessing. You know that your comedy is good when people complain about it. So
that's right.
Okay. I felt like it was like a badge of honor.
That's awesome.
Maybe we should have a podcast about that alone.
Yeah, crossing the line.
We already did. Dealing with weirdos. Right?
Yeah, that's right.
No, it's good to have feedback, no matter what type of feedback it is. Anyway, one of the big topics relating to church planting that we haven't really discussed yet is bivocational ministry. A new church obviously won't be able to support its pastor right away, unless you're at Pastor Rossiter's church there. as we'll hear later on, whenever he planted his church. No, I'm looking forward to hearing both perspectives from each of you guys, how it came about. But a new church obviously won't have the ability to be able to support its pastor right away. And if he does have enough support from other churches, the reality is that he's probably going to need to work a secular job. A lot of church planters out there deal with this. And another thing about church planting is you probably won't see somebody going into church planting for the pay of it. It's not something that it's like, hey, I want to make six figures a year. I think I'm going to go church plant somewhere, anywhere, really.
So that's guys, what they told me. Somebody lied.
I always wanted to be a church planter to the tourist of Hawaii. Like start it right in the lobby of the resort. That would be so awesome.
That would be quite the revolving door of church membership.
Big givers.
Unintended.
Big givers.
So, guys, how common would you guys say that this is among Baptist church planters? Is this just like across the board, everyone has to deal with this? Or is this just a common thing, maybe an uncommon thing? How does that look?
I think as time goes, it's becoming more and more common. From the people that I've visited with and interacted with, even on, we have this, our brother Brian Reese has this Ministry Connection community on Facebook, and he did an informal poll among some independent Baptist church planters there. And compared to the church planters that were had full-time support, there were twice as many who were either bivocational or had been bivocational at some point.
Yeah, I think it's a lot more common than we let on, especially when we're training people in Bible colleges. Sometimes we present this false reality, not necessarily intentionally, but you know, you see the big churches. It's the church where the pastor, you know, is get paid, who's coming to preach the chapel most likely and can afford to get himself there. And so sometimes this false reality is this is the way it is everywhere. Where more likely the way it is everywhere is you have, you know, especially church planting, it's slow going at the beginning and you're getting started and you have some support of some, you know, some churches, but you can't really take care of all the needs that you have. And so I think sometimes it takes guys by surprise. Oh yeah, now I have to get a job too. And that's one of the things that I hope that I kind of learned in having that discussion and seeing even some of the discussion that was online is it's a big part of planning your church plant is if it's needed or more likely when it's needed, do I have some viable options to take care of my family and to support this church plant?
And it even goes beyond, of course, just church planting to become where it's just a reality for a lot of small churches. I was looking back, referring to the book by Paul Chappell and Clayton Reed called Church Still Works. Mm-hmm. And through Striving Together, they did this national survey of independent Baptist churches. And they found that the mean attendance, so not the angry people, but the the middle point of attendance among independent Baptists was around 100 people on Sunday morning. So that means 50% of the churches they surveyed are more than 100, and the other 50% are 100 or less.
Yeah.
And that's a lot of churches, you know, that are under 100. And when you tally up, you know, how many people it takes to pay for the building, or not how many people, but how many tithes and how many giving units or whatever you have in a church. And then you look at a church plant specifically, and you don't probably have 100% tithe ratio going on in a church plant. They're new people, new to Christ, new to church, and all that stuff. It's probably not even 50%. And so you start adding it up. It probably is that 80 to 100 range where you start to see churches being able to support the cost of the ministry and their pastor's salary. So if you're less than 80 to 100, chances are you're going to have to figure out some side income along the way at some point.
Yeah, and your term side income, and that's a valid term, but there may be some terms, you're not just talking about side income, you're talking about income, you know, the full,
right.
You know, you're not getting much, if anything, and especially when you're at church planning, you think, oh, I got some support. Yeah, but you're not just supporting that family, you're also supporting the church plan.
Yeah.
And you may not have the offerings to pay the rent for the building, you know, and so there's a lot to think about it, and there's a lot of guys that are in that position, and some that are doing just a phenomenal job with opportunities the Lord has given them. But I think we could do better at preparing guys when they're going to go plant a church. Okay, you've planned everything else out. Have you also planned what you're going to do to put food on the table when, right, you know, 100 people don't show up the second week of a church plant?
That's a big deal. And do you guys think that this is something that, Brother Preston, you mentioned that something that's becoming more prevalent. Do you see a trend that it is going to become even more prevalent as we go on?
Well, I think we're coming out of a generation and a culture that were that had a lot of social Christians, you know, and people just kind of did church in the past, and that's not happening as much anymore. And each generation in this postmodern culture is going to be less and less inclined to just go to church. So wouldn't be surprising to watch as the trend of just general church attendance decreases, that also it's more likely that the pastor's going to have to have a job outside of the church.
I don't know if it's more prevalent, but I think it probably is more prevalent for a longer period of time. You know, or like you're saying, that in times gone by, there was more of a culture when you were at a town that, you know, seemed like more people were apt. And maybe some of the older guys would say, yeah, why don't you try to start a church in the 40s and really see how hard it was? I don't think it's ever been easy, you know. Sure. But, you know, when you talk about also just the economy and things that we face and the rise of cost of living and those sorts of things, it's not necessarily all a spiritual thing. It's just part of the culture that we're in. People are giving less. People are going less. And so I think guys are having to be bivocational longer than they have been in the past. And I think as much of a, and there may be spiritual application to that, but I think it's also just a cultural implication of the world that we live in.
Yeah, and of course, we're talking in kind of a modern American context here.
Sure.
Bivocational ministry's been around since the Old Testament. You know, the prophets were farmers or whatever, and the Apostle Paul was a tent maker, and so it's been around forever. But that same Paul that wasn't afraid to get roll up his sleeves and work on tents to provide, he was the same guy that really built a case in 1 Corinthians 9 that the church ought to be taking care of the material needs of its pastor, you know. Yeah. And he even wrote in 1 Timothy that the elders that rule well be counted worthy of double honor and all these things. So when we're talking about bivocational ministry and or marketplace pastors or whatever term you want to put on it, I think that much of the goal of it ought to be temporary.
Yeah.
You know, some people maybe are making the choice that for outreach purposes or whatever, they're going to be doing that. But if you never teach the church to take on that responsibility, you're robbing them of a big blessing and a responsibility God's put upon their shoulders.
Yeah.
There are pros and cons to everything. Let's talk a little bit about that, because you mentioned that there are some pros to it. There are some good things about it. Let's talk first, though, about some of the biggest struggles of being bivocational. You guys have a list for me?
To me, the biggest struggle is time.
Time.
As we've talked in the past, you know, all the need that there is of the church planner to be pastoring those people. Those people, even if there are a few, deserve to have a pastor. And if they are church planted type people, they may need a little bit a closer shepherd, because they may be a little bit more apt to wander, because there's not as many sheep in the flock to kind of get them headed in the same direction. And so that, then on top of it, the time that it takes from, you know, the family, the pastor's family, that can be very difficult. And then obviously the time that it takes from being able to study in God's word you know, the way you need to. And all those things can, you know, I remember being in one place and said, man, I can stand on my head for 90 days. You know, all those things can be juggled if they need to be juggled, and God can do a great work and it can be done. But I think, you know, obviously the struggles of it is the time.
Yeah. And the heart of every pastor is helping people. And yeah. So you're pouring yourself out for, you know, your family and for your church, and to put food on the table and to put sermons, you get sermons ready. And one of the other things that can quickly get lost in that lack of time is just the personal walk with the Lord. Mm-hmm. And then you're even in a worse place, because you're just running on empty all the time. So time is huge. I think also emotionally, you're going to deal with things like guilt, where, and it's not justified guilt necessarily, you're doing what needs to be done.
Yeah.
But you look at all your different roles in life, and you look around, you feel like, well, I'm not doing any of these well.
Yeah.
You know, and so the devil's going to creep in there with guilt and discouragement. And, you know, we were talking with some guys that are doing this and they're living it. And they say, hey, talk about depression. Depression's a reality in the life of probably any pastor at some point, but especially one that's really struggling to juggle all this different stuff.
Yeah. And I don't know if I say this the right way, but, you know, the pastor, the calling to be a pastor and to fulfill that function, doing anything else, unless it's by some means helping you fulfill that function, it's just not satisfying. Yeah. You know, and so that lack of satisfaction of what you could be doing is a lot of times, I think, what brings that discouragement. You know, it's just not satisfying to be able to fulfill what God has called you to do when you're having to do this, to, you know, to put food on the table or to take care of these other things. And I can imagine that could be very discouraging to where you start thinking to yourself, what's the use?
Yeah, and you know, there's the other subtle thing that the devil tries to slip into every person's life is to the temptation just to be prideful. And this is, it's not unique to bivocational ministry. It's everybody. Every one of us has an area, you know, who was it, Ben Franklin that said, if I could get rid of all of my pride, I would be prideful for my humility.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
and but I mean, I think that
actually that was Orville that Redenbacher that said that.
Okay, that's who it was. But I can imagine that on that side of in that particular context of ministry, you know, sometimes somebody that's very just self-built and they're used to just pulling themselves up by their bootstraps, saying, "Hey, look what I've been able to accomplish here." That can lead to a lot of different attitude problems and bitterness and chip on the shoulder type thing that could be a detriment.
You know, it's funny as we talk about this, I'm just thinking to myself, you know, these are things that are highlighted. These are struggles that are highlighted by that bivocational ministry. But to be honest, these are all potential struggles for anybody. Tell me a pastor Yep. that doesn't struggle with time. You know, tell me a pastor that doesn't struggle with making sure he gives his family the priority they need, or the study the priority is need, or his personal walk the priority is need, or we all pick something to be prideful about, you know. And yep. So I think bivocational sometimes highlights these struggles. And I know we're going to talk about an advantage, but one of those advantages is if you give it to God, you know, and say, this is where God has me, and become, you know, more God dependent, it'll make you stronger. It'll make yeah. you stronger, and all these struggles will not go away when you become full time. You know, they will not go away. And so, you know, if it's highlighted, if you're like, man, this is great. God is highlighting something that it's going to require you giving dependency to God. And as you learn that, it's going to be very beneficial.
And that was another theme that came up in the discussion we had with a lot of these guys, is that God's grace is sufficient.
Yeah.
And it was amazing how much it has funneled them just to rely upon him more and to say, hey, you know, I don't have all the time I would love to put into my sermons, but God is supplying, you know, the messages, and he's making it work.
Yeah.
So. Yeah. And are we surprised then that God would push us in that area, and that God would put the pressure on a little bit to put a little bit of attention on our time? And I think that that's awesome that you transitioned over to that. One of the weaknesses of it, one of the struggles of it, can actually turn into an advantage if you will let mm-hmm. it, if you allow God to mold you under that pressure. And it is pressure. I can't imagine pastoring a church. I've never been in the situation. I've just been on an assistant pastor role, but I can't imagine having that pressure on you and then having a job to boot, because I know going and working a full-time job and then coming home after that, or coming back to the college dorm after that, it was very difficult to have any initiative to do anything after a long day of work. So finding the initiative to do that, but when the pressure's on, there are some advantages of it if you let God work through it. And what are some of those other advantages of it? We talked a little bit about the cons. Let's talk about the pros now.
Well, I mean, to me, one of the biggest advantages, especially if you're working a job in the community, is that you're in the community, you know,
yep.
And connecting with the community is so important for a church planner, you know, to get the knowledge of the church out, and also the temperament of the church out there. And so having a proper work relationship and building good relationships and having a good rapport with the people that are around you, you know, it's a great witnessing tool. You know, sometimes when you become full-time, you're like, I got to go hunt for somebody to witness to.
Right.
You know, where if you're working and getting paid for it, you know, and let's be honest, some jobs are going to highlight that advantage more than others.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but to me, that's probably one of the biggest advantages, is you stay fresh with people and the needs of people and the heart of people and the hurting of people. And so you are just viewing yourself as, hey, I'm a pastor of your community, and here's how I can get out there and let them know, you know, who I am.
Yeah, I read one bivocational pastor that said it outright, and some others alluded to it in some of their comments, was he said, I feel sorry for pastors that aren't out in the community working a job. Just he just sensed that the advantages that it gave him in the way of exposure and outreach were huge. And there is, when you read about it, there is a growing trend of pastors that say, hey, I would never change this. I would never, you know, maybe the church would be able someday to take on some of the benefits or some of the pay, but he said, you know, a lot of guys are saying, I would never give up my outside job, because it plugs me into the community, and so it becomes just a strategic choice that they make, whether or not the church is financially capable of them going full time. And I think a lot, it also helps a pastor identify with the struggles of their congregation.
Yeah.
You know, that we can, a pastor can in time become a little bit detached from the day-to-day vexation that happens just working out in the world and among people, and how challenging and trying that can be.
You know, something I think that can be learned, you know, for guys that are full-time, you know, when they hear somebody who we view as, oh man, I'm so sorry you have to work a job, and they're like, no, this is the best place for me to witness, you know, that's something that we can and should learn. Doesn't mean we necessarily have to go get a job, but there's lots of things that you can and should be doing in the community to stay connected. And we're going to be giving our time to something. And so that's, I think that's a good counsel to give, is, hey, you have to be connected to the community. But most likely those guys that are saying that have a job that is flexible enough for them to be pastor first, you know,
right.
And that job probably in some way allows them some mobility, some movement where they can interact with different people and perform a function or a service So that it really is an extension of what they're already doing, and you know, getting paid for outreach, so to speak. And I was reading that some of those comments, and there were some creative ideas of things that guys can do to get paid and get paid for it. That is interacting with the community. And I thought that's pretty neat. And you can tell those are guys that are in the trenches that says, I'm not just trying to get by.
Right.
You know, I'm trying to thrive in such a way that I can fulfill my responsibilities, but yet still do what's needed to do to put food on the table.
Yeah. I think another side benefit could be that the pastor that's very limited on his time to do the work of the ministry finds himself forced into delegating to church members the work of the ministry.
Yeah.
And that's ultimately what we're supposed to be doing anyway, is to equip them to do the work. And just as sometimes being out there in the marketplace forces us or highlights some of our deficiencies, it can also highlight some things that we ought to be doing in ministry already, and to hand that stuff off and get people more involved.
I think we should do a whole episode on delegation. I think it's an awesome tool that Brother Rossiter introduced me to whenever I got here. That
Why don't we delegate that to you, Brother Corey?
Yeah,
you can take that.
Let's delegate that episode to him.
Well, you need somebody to delegate, and then they redelegate, and it just transfers even quicker. That mentality of getting busy, you know.
Yeah, get busy.
Well, to the new church planner who's just getting started, or maybe one who's been out there a while but his support is drying up, I mean, we could talk about that for a while too. And he's maybe thinking about getting a job outside the church to help provide. What advice would you give him? And what types of jobs after that would, I know Brother Rossiter alluded to this a little bit, what types of jobs should he search for?
Yeah, and I know it may be hard for somebody who's already doing it, but I think talking about that preparation, I think when we're training young men, whether it's Bible college or even young men that feel like God's called them to preach and they're in our youth department, that way back then we need to put an emphasis on a trade, to where you can make yourself valuable. And tell them, listen, being good at something doesn't take away your calling. And being good at something will perhaps enhance your calling. And so teaching them early let's learn something. What do you like? What are things that are important to you? You know, are you mechanical? Are you full of technology? Or, and let's learn a trade and promote that. I had an idea for a Bible college a couple years ago. And, of course, everybody thinks I'm stupid. But I said, why don't you bring some guys? Let's build a shed. You'll teach them to work with their hands. And when you're done building the shed or the barn or whatever, you can sell it to a church or give it to a church. And they'll have to look at plans. They'll have to know how to cut a piece of wood, and just giving them some practical sense of I can work, and whether it's any sort of skilled labor, that should be something we're promoting to Bible colleges, that guys, you need to learn how to do something. Because you may have to be able to do it.
Even if they never utilize those skills for an income, I don't know of any church that doesn't at some point need some construction or some plumbing or something need to be done in it.
Yeah. And now, I mean, it doesn't translate to me, but some of these guys understand technology and they can make money online and all those sorts of things. If that's something that can and can be done, especially with the flexibility of time, we should be promoting that. We should be teaching that, and saying, guys, you may have to support yourself. Here's some options. But anybody knows to do something good, it takes practice and time. Wouldn't it be nice to promote that before they get into the pastorate instead of, oh, no, my support is dried up. I got to figure out what trade I can learn so I can make some money. You're really behind the eight ball at that point.
Yeah, it's very difficult. I think the key word... The key word in all this is probably flexibility. Try to, if you can, the ideal situation is one that is going to be flexible, where you have control over the schedule, and the more control you have, the better. Then you can set it up to where it works with ministry. You know, everybody kind of runs on a different time clock and so on. Some people love doing overnight. One guy that I read, I thought it made a lot of sense. He said, try to work out your job, your secular part of your work, when everybody else is busy with work and school and stuff. Keep your evenings as free as possible. Keep your weekends free, because that's when family stuff happens. That's when ministry stuff, by and large, happens. And I think that made a lot of sense. I also liked all the suggestions that had to do with public school, substitute teachers, bus driver, officiating sports. That one wouldn't go very well for me. I'd make some, I wouldn't make any money. I'd make a lot of bad calls.
Unless it was a chess match.
Yes. Great idea. I'm sure there's a great demand for that.
Vicious.
You know, there's when I was bivocational, the job that I had was, and this may sound a little bit weird, but it was in a bigger city there in Tampa, and I did a lot of valet parking. And I was able to make quite a bit of money in a short period of time. And while the actual show was going on, you just sat and did nothing, you know, and got paid for it. So I would have my books or, you know, or whatever I was needing to do. And I could study, I could grade, I could prepare, and I was still getting paid for it. So just looking for that opportunity to make yourself, you know, have the flexibility. But if you have the skills to make yourself a commodity, then you're at least you're in the driver's seat, you know, with that schedule. I mean, if you're, I don't want to be critical, but if you're making burritos at Taco Bell, you're going to be a slave to that, you know, that 22-year-old that's making the schedule, and he's not going to care much about ministry. You know, and so just learning something that allows you, and I'm sure there's other means to be able to learn trade, and to learn, you know, some skills. And sometimes you got to put the effort in to learn it.
Yeah, you got to put in the time. And one of those, I think I mentioned this on the last podcast, but for those specifically wondering, lynda.com, lynda.com. It's $35 a month, and you have access to hundreds of thousands of hours of videos, and they're very easy to watch, very easy to follow along with, for anything from bookkeeping to design, web design, graphic design, writing, anything really that you can do with a computer, you can learn on lynda.com, and very quickly, and you can do it well. And so you can develop a trade by doing that. You can sell stuff online. There are ways you can learn the ropes of that. Even on lynda.com, you can learn how to sell on Amazon, sell on eBay, even some things in your very own home. Some guys do window washing. Some guys do phone screen repair. A lot of them have a lawn business. I've seen some guys get away with doing real estate, pizza delivery, and even Brother Adam last week talked about being an Uber driver. These are all things that are flexible and that you can really work your own hours into that. And I think that that's a big deal, is the flexibility, what Brother Preston mentioned. And developing a trade is a big deal too. And that's what, something that I hadn't really considered until I got out into the, I'm using finger quotes here, real world, of seeing what it takes to be able to make money. And really, you got to invest some time, you got to invest some effort into learning how to do something in order to be able to make money doing that. So I think those are all good things. And if you would like to contact us more specifically on some of these things, you can do that. Feel free to do that. Some men feel called to do bivocational ministry no matter how large the church gets. I remember we were talking about one guy who has been a pastor for over 10 years, and he doesn't need to necessarily have another job, but he desires to do it just for the outreach purpose of it. But for maybe the guy who really wants to be full-time in the ministry, what steps would that guy need to take in order to get there?
Well, there's the obvious stuff, and that is just work hard, as hard as you can, reaching people. And because a lot of the problems that churches have could be solved by just seeing more people saved and baptized. You get more people sitting in the pew, that's more people giving. And if you're not teaching on giving, I know it can be awkward, but you need to do it. It gets a bad rap, and it might feel a bit self-serving, but it's not. We fail our churches if we're not teaching them to be givers, because they are missing out on putting God first and all the blessings that come with that, you know. I also would say get a long-range plan in place. It's not just going to happen automatically. You've got to maybe plan out 5 years and say, what are we going to try to do each year? Make changes in the budget, get people on board with the goal, you know. Right now at our church, we've been fully supported, but in time, you know, that outside support, that's just a temporary thing, and that needs to be shifted off, and the church here needs to take that on. So that is our number one financial goal as a church, is to take on the pastor's salary. And so we every year we're tweaking it. And matter of fact, quarter to quarter, we are watching the budget, seeing what can we do, how much more can we take on. We even established a vision fund where people can give above and beyond their tithe to this goal. And it's amazing, but many people love the idea of giving, especially, you know, to try to take care of their pastor. It's something special that they can do.
That thing you mentioned, having a plan in place, a five-year plan, whatever it is, mm-hmm. Looking ahead. I was so surprised whenever I started asking, this is a couple years ago, but I started asking around to other pastors and other full-time ministry workers, hey, at your church, what's your plan for this far out? And just threw out a number. Mm-hmm. And they kind of looked at me weird, like, I don't know what you're talking about. Aren't we supposed to live day by day? Aren't we supposed to do this Christian walk thing day by day? And they got a point. I mean, there's something to be said about living day by day. But really, man, you've got to be planning ahead on all these things. Otherwise, no wonder you're going to be frustrated with staying bivocational your whole life if you're not planning ahead and budgeting not just your money, but your time and what stages you're going to be taking in your in that church plan.
And I think to Brother Hoyce's point, that plan is going to be better implemented if it is a shared burden.
Yeah. Yep.
If it is just the pastor's plan, first of all, nobody's going to know it unless he communicates it. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be better communicated by people catching on to that plan. Maybe it's grabbing a couple guys that you can personally sit down and say, you know, do you see this? This is important in the scripture. I don't want it to come across self-serving. Right. If you feel this is important, you know, I need you to take the charge. Here's the basic plan. But hey, this is important, and I don't want to come across as the one who's always talking about it, you know. And just sharing that with a small group of people, if you have deacons or just some men in your church, so that it's brought up not just by you, but that plan is something that is a shared burden instead of just an authoritative, you know, demand. And then the other thing is you don't have to be able to do it all to do some. You know, I would say what you can do, you do. You know, you do it, and that teaches them. Hey, we're doing, and then look to increase it, and look to continue, and share that. Especially if you're a church plant, one of the things that we did was, you know, about 1 year anniversary, we had, you know, Pastor Neil, our sending pastor, came over, and he preached. And in his message was transferring that burden. Hey guys, mm-hmm. This is your pastor, and I really encourage you to take care of your pastor, take care of his family. So sometimes coming from an outside voice that you trust can also be beneficial to remind people that the workman is worthy of his hire. And but I agree with you that having something in place, a plan, trying to reach it, but while you're doing that, everything else doesn't have to go on hold.
Right.
And maybe you guys would disagree with me, but we had our first missions conference before they could pay my salary completely. I was getting some, but they couldn't pay my salary. And I remember talking to a pastor who really, to be honest, kind of berated me for starting a missions fund when the pastor was not fully supported yet. And I agree, you can go overboard. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're sending to missionaries, you know, double what the pastor should get paid, that's some misplaced priorities, perhaps, at that point, if you can't even pay him. But this is what I believe. If the church had a heart for missions, then they would probably not have a difficult time having a heart for their pastor.
Right.
If they saw the need and the burden that people had in order to share the gospel, then that was going to translate. And so I just agreed to disagree if you had given me a chance to speak. You know, it's funny. This is funny. I had the conversation with him actually while I was on a boat fishing with one of our church members. I was actually doing ministry. Wasn't getting paid for it. But I was fishing. And after I got off the phone with him, I put my phone in my pocket. And when I did that, I must have butt dialed him. And he sat there and listened to me for about 5 or 6 minutes while I was just fellowshipping fishing. All of a sudden, I heard him yelling on the phone. I was like, somebody's yelling in my pocket. And I pulled out my phone and he said, see, I know what you're doing. You're out fishing when you could be witnessing or blah, 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 blah. And went on. I said, thank you so much. And just hung up the phone. And I just thought that is so unreasonable to think that the pastor, either by vocationally or he can only do, all he can care about is getting money. Hmm. And that's the first priority and the only priority.
Yeah.
And that just doesn't make sense. You can do other stuff while the church learns to support their pastor. Mm-hmm. You know, ministry can't be put on hold. Missions can't be put on hold. It's just, right. It may be at the top of the priority line, but it can't be the only priority.
Yeah. Going back to your the missions idea and so on, our church decided to take on our family as one of its missionaries.
Praise the Lord.
So it's not a huge part of it, but we support 7 other missionaries outside of our church, whether foreign or here in home missions and so on. But also, as like I mentioned, this is financial goal number one. This is our vision. And so another little piece of that pie, there happened to be good missions commitment, and so we're putting a little bit of that towards it. So
that's awesome.
Well, we know we haven't exhausted the subject today. If you have any more that you would like to hear on this topic, or you'd like to discuss it even further, just go on our Facebook page and post something on there, and we'll strike up a conversation. It's something that we will no doubt bring up again in future episodes for future talks, especially with how prevalent bivocational church planning is and how prevalent it's becoming. But before we close out this episode, what other resources would you guys recommend that could be a help to or an encouragement to those listening?
You know, to me, I really was appreciative of the conversation just had with other pastors that, you know, probably one of the best ways to get some ideas is talk to some guys that are doing it and just be creative. But in order to do that, you have to come with the idea that your idea may not work for everybody.
Right.
You know, but it was an encouragement to me to see pastors. And to be honest, you know, kind of being beyond that point in our ministry, sometimes it can be out of sight, out of mind. And so just having that conversation with some guys and having some fellowship and saying, okay, how did you get through this and what did you do? And give me some ideas of how I can, you know, can do this. You know, good fellowship amongst pastors. Mm-hmm. You know, it is of great, great benefit. Bad fellowship amongst pastors is very damaging. So make sure you're on the good side. But I thought that was just a very, very helpful, instructional, encouraging discussion.
Yeah.
Just from guys that are going through it.
Right. Yeah, I was encouraged by it. I mean, I'm sitting there thinking, man, these guys, they're just the salt of the earth. They've got good attitudes about it, and they are just working like crazy. And it's because they've got a heart for the ministry. They know they've got a call from God. They know that they have a responsibility to take care of their families, and they're willing to, by the grace of God, do more than a human being ought to be able to do, and just to make sure that it gets done. We've mentioned the the Rainer Lead on Leadership podcast before. Also, TomRainer.com. He has a good blog and often writes about bivocational ministry. He leads Lifeway, Lifeway.com, and they have a lot of good stuff on their blog. I was researching for this episode. I came across another website called BivoSmallChurch.net, and I haven't checked it all out, but I think it's done by a Southern Baptist group, but I'm having just looked at it briefly, seems to have some encouraging content on there too. So
if you would like to submit an idea for an upcoming episode, we'd love to hear from you. Go to our website, churchplantertalks.com, and fill out the contact form, or you can email us directly, churchplantertalks@gmail.com. Don't forget to go subscribe, and while you're there, be sure to give us a good review if you enjoyed listening. So for Pastor Rossiter and Pastor Preston Hoyseth, this is Corey Eastep saying goodbye, and God bless you and your church planning endeavors.